Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable on WAMC. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news here at 13 minutes after 9 o'clock. And we'd love you to join our conversation. You can email us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. And today we are joined by University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. Nice
Good
to have
morning.
You back. Thank you. And associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, is here.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
Nice to have you here indeed on this, I guess we get some bad weather ahead, so we'll get the show over with.
And start home and putting out the salt on the sidewalk.
Hunker down. As you heard our weather alarmist, Dave Gustina, mention in the newscast, it's a winter storm watch in effect pretty much for the entire region. Could be 4, could be 7. I saw in the Times Union today up to 10 inches of snow possible before it's all done on Sunday. So we will have Paul Caiano's midday weather summary around 12:25 today. And we'll have meteorologists or a meteorologist a couple of times later in the afternoon. And we will, of course, keep you posted as the day wears on and the weekend wears on here at WAMC. All right. With that dispensed with, we are now on to our program today. And let's take care of some business from yesterday. Some email came in. You know, we discussed the possibility of Liz Krueger wanting to legalize marijuana in New York. And as I predicted, The email comes flying in. So here we go. This is from Al, and I won't say last names. I don't know what the policy is, but we'll just say it's Al. There is a case to be made for legal pot, but if we legalize it, we better get ready for greater highway deaths. The compromise should be that there is no allowable amount of pot's active ingredient in the blood. If we were serious about highway safety, we would also not have an allowable amount of blood alcohol. Impaired drivers kill far more each year than the terrorists we are chasing all over the world. We should be like Sweden, no alcohol at all if you are driving. And that's from Al. Anybody want to weigh in on that?
The problem, I mean, one of the practical problems they have to deal with if recreational marijuana is to be legalized is how do you quickly, easily measure whether somebody has been recently smoking marijuana? I mean,
Indeed.
They have a breathalyzer mm-hmm. test, they have blood tests for alcohol, but they need quick, easy ways to so that they can police
They're munching on Cheetos.
Yeah, that's one well, indicator.
It's a sign.
You know, you're right. I mean, is it safe and effective to have a field blood test? Because, I mean, from what I understand from the science, it does stay in the system much longer than alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the impairment may not be there, arguably. I guess that'll be one of the big debates that'll come up. I read in one piece a stunning assertion by a researcher that people who smoke marijuana and drive are less impaired than people who drink and drive. And, you know, if I'm not making that assertion, nor do I have any knowledge that that's the case.
Okay.
But if that's the debate, I mean, that's just going to be, you know, those things have to be worked out before you start handing out.
I hope that it won't be worked out with deaths on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, part of this is an education program, too. Mm-hmm. If you're going to drink, you have to figure out how to do that responsibly. Mm-hmm. I look back and what we did routinely in my younger years, and I'm horrified. I don't want my children doing that. We've learned a lot about it. And the same has to be true with marijuana.
And this is from Eric, who said, prohibition of vices never works, and why is it the government's business if I want to take drugs, eat cheeseburgers, or visit a prostitute?
Oh, we read that one yesterday.
Oh, you regulate and tax them.
That turned into whether prostitution is the same as the other two.
Right. He says, vices attract a criminal element when you make them crimes.
True
and
enough.
Then...
If there are no victims.
We have this from Anonymous. Hello to all the members on the panel. Hello.
Hello.
Legalizing marijuana or any more of society's vices is a bad thing. To do this is similar to the legalization of prostitution. It is an insult to the entire LGBT community to draw any comparison to gay marriage because gay marriage is not one of society's vices. Thank you, Anonymous, who also says, by the way, the marijuana trade is not victimless.
Hmm. Okay, I'm not sure who the victims are of marijuana.
If it was grown legally, farm taxed, et cetera. But
yeah.
You know.
The cartels certainly leave a trail of bodies.
Yeah, they do. I mean, in a way, it may cut down on the
yeah.
The amount of illegal activity and the victims.
And to clear up something, the comparison with gay marriage was simply, Fussfeld made the remark, which I agree with, that the movement towards legalization of marijuana is very similar to what happened with gay marriage.
That was his
more
point.
Of an openness of it. Certainly I would never. I don't know anybody in the panel who would equate gay marriage with a vice.
What he was saying was it was a movement that gathered steam.
Right. Despite laws, despite an entrenched...
It's cultural change.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And Ira's assertion was that, marijuana legalization is...
It's coming.
It is...
Yeah. It's inevitable.
Written in the stars and inevitable, just a question of time. All right. And finally, this is from John, who says, I don't always agree with each of you, and sometimes I agree with different ones of you. However, I love it.
Oh, good. That's exactly what you should be thinking.
You are all very intelligent, informative, and most thoughtfully opinionated. Keep it up. A couple things. Are you sure you had this the right radio station? And two, I'm reminded of John Cleese as Basil Fawlty, who said, a satisfied customer. We should have him stuffed. All right, on to today's topics on the roundtable, and we'll start this one and then take a break and pick it up again. This suggested by Rosemary late last night, and it's a doozy. And I, if you want to weigh in, please feel free to email roundtable@wamc.org. And I'll read this from the Associated Press, David Eggert. Michigan will join more conservative states in requiring residents who want health insurance coverage for abortions to buy an extra policy after Republican legislators passed the law Wednesday, over the objections of Democrats who pleaded for them to take the issue to voters instead. The Citizens Initiative approved 62-47 by the House and 27-11 in the Senate, almost entirely along party lines, will become law in March without the signature of Republican Governor Rick Snyder, who vetoed similar legislation a year ago. The anti-abortion group Right to Life collected more than 300,000 signatures to put the legislation before lawmakers, who also had the option of letting it go to a statewide vote next November. Now, the law prohibits insurance companies from offering abortion coverage as part of both public and private health plans, except when a woman's life is at risk. Employers and individuals who want abortion coverage must buy supplemental policies known as riders. Rosemary, I give you first crack.
Okay. I am amazed by this, and I've really thought about it, because as you know, I'm trying to build this reputation on this program as someone who will at least look at the side that I disagree with. And this just seems like a bad law, and I don't understand their thinking. There's a difference between a law and a fiat. And this is a fiat. The difference is that there's no escape clause. There's no outlet for mercy in here. If you're a woman who has been raped or is the subject of incest and you become pregnant, unless you have bought insurance ahead of time, you can't have your abortion covered. It just seems so cruel and so unnecessary. You could even get this idea passed, but allow an escape clause. It's like Sharia law. There's like no exception. And if you think about it, I know you're going to talk here in a minute, Mike, but let me add this. If you look at murder in our legal system, you may not commit murder. That's the law. Except, if someone's attacking you, if someone's coming after your children, you can kill them.
Well, then that's not a murder.
You can defend yourself.
That's not
regarded. Right.
But here, this is no abortions under any circumstances, I guess unless, your life is at risk. And the fact that this is coming at a time when abortions are very down in across the nation, but especially in Michigan, there's not a lot of number. This is not a costly thing. And the way this was done, actually, rather cleverly, they got 300,000 signatures, which sounds like a lot, but it's only 4% of the population of that state, and send it to enough conservative Republican legislators that they decide to pass it over Democratic votes and without letting it go to the public. Either method, which might have made a compromise or going to the taxpayers, might have resulted in a kinder law.
And this is the ninth state, I believe, to do something along these lines. Mike, I know you wanted to weigh in.
No, it's just that the Republican governor, Rick Snyder, had actually vetoed a similar bill a year ago, and this will go into effect without his signature.
Yep.
So I think in general it just shows, as you were saying, it's going on in several other states. It's a shift and in tactics, certainly, and in the way that— you know, the right for a woman to have an abortion is being sort of whittled away at the state level,
yep.
putting obstacles in people's way. And it's certainly, you know, based on some very fundamental disagreements about, you know, the legality and the morality of abortions. In this case, they're talking about a rider, you know, which is like when you buy car insurance and get a rider to mm-hmm. cover, you know, comprehensive fire and theft.
Or a flood rider on a house.
On a house, yeah. right. Well, here they're saying you can get an abortion services rider where you can pay an extra dollar or something a month. And then in case there ever becomes a need, you're covered. But that requires people to sort of anticipate right. that they might need right. this.
I mean, what do you, if you have a 14-year-old yeah. daughter, do you get the insurance then just to be sure? It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's
I don't
also
know the
inequality
answer.
I mean, between men and women. Men don't have to pay for such a rider.
And another one they brought up, too, yeah, is that sometimes when a woman makes this very difficult decision, she wants to do it privately without her family involved. If, you know, if she has this coverage, that's her choice in most states. In Michigan, it would have required her to go ahead and plan this ahead of time and
yeah.
It makes people
yeah.
confront a very personal issue and can cause people to avoid it and then kind of get caught in the end.
I want to hit inequality again.
Well, let's do that. Let's just take a short break, and then you'll get the floor, Rosemary Armeo. Rosemary is here. Mike Spain from the TU is here. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable, back after a short break.
Support for WMC comes from Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities, open 7 days a week. YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies, Millbrook, presenting investigative journalist Alan Weissman, exploring the population problem in his new book, Countdown, Our Last Best Future on Earth. January 10th at 7 p.m., CaryInstitute.org. And Binniewater Ice and Spring Water, Kingston, delivering spring water, coffee service, and Mountain Valley spring water in glass bottles and containers to homes and offices in Ulster, Dutchess, and beyond. Local and family-owned, BinnieWater.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:25 is the time. It's our panel this morning. You can join the conversation by emailing roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. And we've been discussing this morning a new Michigan law that basically, well, health insurance now will require a rider for women who want or
who
need
may at some time need abortion
correct.
Services.
And Rosemary, you wanted to continue.
Well, I want to hit the idea of inequality. This is insurance that mostly only women would need. I don't want to say no man is ever raped. Please don't misunderstand that. But overwhelmingly, right. this is going to be hitting women harder than men. It's also going to hit poor women much harder than it will wealthy women who can pay out of their pocket. It makes a big, much bigger difference for a poor woman. It's just unfair on so many levels. And while I don't agree with some of the rhetoric, I can understand it. The women, especially a number of Democratic legislators in Michigan, were getting up telling, you know, very harrowing stories about rape or miscarriage or horrible attacks that they had themselves suffered or friends had. And they're calling this rape insurance and speaking just with great hatred, which is what abortion always does. We can't discuss it without name-calling and just getting so extremely personal.
Mm. Well, it's a very personal issue. And certainly, yeah, I mean, it's been an emotional issue for years and years and years.
So are things like murder and breaking and entering, and yet we can discuss that without.
I think, you know, you could get a room full of people who agree on 9 out of 10 things, and you're going to get disagreement over abortion. Mm-hmm. It's where otherwise reasonable people have very difficult times agreeing with each other and accepting each other's position on it.
I think that's just true.
So emotional.
I'm not
yeah.
exactly
it's not like
sure
murder. Everybody's
why.
Going to be against murder usually, you know.
Yeah, certainly most people.
But I mean, but if you, well, you can understand. I mean, there's the explanation. If people obviously people are against murder, if you believe personally that abortion amounts to murder, that's where it all began.
Well, it's all that start of life stuff that seems to get us into a culture war like contraception, which is you take something to prevent life. So what's wrong with that? Then it becomes a religious belief that, you know, that's our destiny, is to produce life. So contraception becomes
wrong. I mean, it's based on people's religious and moral values. Sure. But the Supreme Court has asserted that it is a person's individual right to decide whether they want to continue a pregnancy up to a certain point.
True. I think that the attacks at the state level that you point out, this is a change in tactics, Mike. I think we're going to see it next. These have been very successful. Watch it next on birth control.
Wow.
Interesting indeed. Well, I think this case is certainly destined for some court activity. I mean, once it goes into effect.
But these are in other states, and they seem to be surviving because the national health care law does permit states to have some levity about how they, you know, flexibility, I guess, in how they handle these matters. So it probably would survive court.
Well, the thing is, if somebody took the tack that Rosemary just mentioned, the inequality of it, then someone may have a solid, a poor woman may have the basis for a case that could eventually go to the Supreme Court.
I do see that possibility. You know, it's just interesting that while we're having all these horrible disagreements and the fighting continues, we're wasting all this legislative time on these issues rather than, like, let's find jobs, let's fix the economy, let's regulate banks. I'd rather see of course, not the state legislatures, but something equally important should be done there. We're spending it on this. And what's really happening is that the number of abortions is going down. Education has kicked in.
If they outlaw birth control or restrict birth control, that's going to go back.
Sex education is another thing. If you teach kids what's going on, you're not encouraging them to have sex. You're teaching them to act responsibly. It's all tied in together. And we continue, I think, to make it harder than it need be.
And that's a good spot to leave it for the first half hour. Again, the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. Much more to come with Rosemary Armeo and Mike Spain and yours truly, Ray Graff. You are listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. I'm drifting off here. It's like being in an elevator. Well done. Jessica O'Rourke here, our engineer, picked some very relaxing bumper music here on the Roundtable this morning. 9:36 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Rosemary Armeo is here. The TU's Mike Spain as well. And if you haven't heard the news, as reported breathlessly by our Dave Gustina earlier this morning, a winter storm watch is in effect from tomorrow morning through Sunday morning. And depending on the way things shape up, it could be a whopper. Talking 7 inches of snow, maybe 10, maybe 4, maybe, you know, 4.5. I mean, we just don't know.
This is weather inflation, really. We don't know.
We really don't know.
Inflation.
And I think most meteorologists would tell you after 24 hours, it's something of a crapshoot anyway. So, I mean, who knows? So we'll keep you posted, and we'll have Paul Caiano with the weather this afternoon at 12:25. And throughout the day, we'll have updates for you on this impending snow disaster, which is looming large. It's Friday the 13th.
The apocalypse.
It's Friday the 13th.
Snowopolis.
Anybody here superstitious about Friday the 13th? Or
Trichodecaphobia, is that the title?
Is that how the name of the... Well, I wasn't, except now that you mentioned it.
Yeah, and there is a snowstorm.
Yeah.
Aha! It's the end! It's the end! Get Christina in here. I'm not really... this whole thing. And, you know, you go to a hotel and there's no 13th floor and...
Yeah.
Well, what is that?
Yeah, I think it's a vestige of the past, and we've gotten past
it. Goes back
that.
To the Templars, they say.
Yes. Does that right?
They all were burned on Friday the 13th.
I didn't know that.
There are a million theories, but that's one of them.
Huh.
And then, all right, so we...
How about black cats? They're okay?
I don't know. Ladders. I don't care.
Shelters are filled with black cats because people won't keep them. It's
really?
Horrible. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I'll be darned. All right, let's move on. And we obviously have affirmed that we are not superstitious here on the Roundtable. If you are, you can email us at roundtable@wamc.org.
And what would you say to us?
Well...
I'm superstitious.
We don't know. We'll find out. And let's go to our next item here this morning. It's a strange story. And this is from the AP. Sentence in Texas teen's fatal DWI wreck stirs ire. Affluenza, the affliction cited by a psychologist who argued that a North Texas teenager from a wealthy family should not be sent to prison for killing four pedestrians while driving drunk is not a recognized diagnosis and should not be used to justify bad behavior, experts said yesterday. A judge's decision to give 16-year-old Ethan Couch 10 years of probation for the fatal accident sparked outrage from relatives of those killed and has led to questions about the defense strategy. A psychologist testified in Couch's trial in a Fort Worth juvenile court that as a result of affluenza, the boy should not receive a maximum 20-year prison sentence prosecutors were seeking. Have you ever heard the like, Mike?
You know, the psychologist that they had testify at the trial on behalf of the defense said the boy had an unhealthy relationship with his wealthy parents who used him as a tool and a hostage to extract concessions from each other. So essentially, he painted a picture of this kid being a victim and the way that the reason he was so reckless to be drinking and driving at such a young age and behaving in such a risky way is that his parents basically failed him. They were wealthy and they fought with each other and they used him as sort of a means of getting back at each other, like some parents have been known to do. And he is not responsible for his actions because of that. He's a victim. He's going to get probation and lots of counseling. And that's the defense. It's hard to stomach because almost any kid that goes on trial, you know, around here or anywhere for committing horrific crimes, I'm sure you could find a counselor or a psychologist that would say he's that way because his parents failed him. Now, parents may fail other kids in poverty situations by neglecting them and not taking care of them, not being there for them. Well, these parents, they had another disability in that they showered him with every possible thing that he could have, and that ruined him, and therefore he's not responsible for it, and that's sort of the case. It's kind of repugnant.
Earlier in the show, I was extolling the idea of mercy in our justice system, and this is an example of that. Give this kid a break because he had a bad upbringing. However, it is indeed a little ridiculous. This is what comes of the idea that everyone is innocent until proven guilty, and they're all entitled to a defense. It reminds me of the Twinkie defense we heard of a few years ago, where a young man's bad behavior was blamed on his consumption of junk food.
That's always been my excuse.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it makes you think crazy. Too many
sure.
Cheese doodles, and
ho-hos.
You don't know what you'll do. So, yeah, he can make the defense. The real outrage here is not that he made it, not that he's allowed to make it by our wonderful justice system, but that a judge actually bought into it. So now it's establishing at least this court in Houston. And here's my question is, like, what's the cutoff? Like, what's a wealthy family? If you're bad to your kid and you make $50,000 a year, do you get to use this defense, or do you have to make
$100,000
a year?
Well, you couldn't afford the lawyer and the
yeah. But I mean, I wonder how often you can flip this on its head and it works. In other words, so many crimes committed by people of low economic standing who also have broken, I'm not even saying this kid has a broken family situation. Obviously, he had everything he ever wanted materially. But how about the poor kid whose family was terrible? Does that defense work?
It will only work, Ray, if you can think of a cute little name for it, like affluenza.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are cases where kids are in trouble, probably not where four people are dead because of a car crash. That they were driving the car. But there's cases where judges, I think, and courts have been merciful and given kids a second chance and recognized that they came out of a troubled situation. There's a blogger for the Washington Post that says, affluenza sounds like the best disease ever. Symptoms
yeah.
include having money, having lots of money, and having so much money you are actively unhappy about it. Having lots of things, lots of money, having so much money that none of your actions have consequences.
Yeah,
that's great.
And the background here from paragraph 3 of this AP article yesterday, the term affluenza was popularized in the late 1990s by Jessie O'Neill, the granddaughter of a past president of General Motors, when she wrote the book, The Golden Ghetto, The Psychology of Affluence. It has since been used to describe the condition in which children, generally from richer families, have that sense of entitlement, are irresponsible, make excuses for poor behavior, sometimes dabble in drugs and alcohol, explained Dr. Gary Buffone, a Jacksonville, Florida psychologist who does family wealth advising. But Buffone said in a telephone interview to the AP yesterday that the term wasn't meant to be used as a defense in a criminal trial or to justify such bad behavior. The simple term, he said, would be spoiled brat.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Actually, it's been my experience as a mother and teacher that you don't have to come from wealth to have that sense of entitlement.
Well, you're right.
Right. You don't have, your parents don't have to be afflicted with wealth.
Right.
In order to ruin your life.
I mean, we
spoiled
laugh, but
brats
four people,
show up everywhere.
Four people are dead.
Well,
I mean,
that's the outrage here, and the families
yeah,
of the.
I agree.
I mean, the next step, of course, is, and if I were these families of the people that were killed in this horrific accident, I would go after that family for every penny they have relieve them from this
affluenza.
Yes.
That's a good point.
That's true. To help them, it would help all of us if you just gave us some
I bet they would
money,
do well. There'll be more in this case. I'll bet that they will go after them in a civil court, and I'll bet that a jury will be quite sympathetic.
Yeah. All right. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:45 is the time. Rosemary Armeo is here. Mike Spain is here. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. And Mike, from the pages of your own Times Union. Interesting. It's sort of another thing that is moving across the country in little bits, like marijuana legalization. This is on the styrofoam law bandwagon. And Mike, explain this one.
Well, Albany County has the legislature had passed a bill, and it was signed yesterday by the county executive, Dan McCoy, that will essentially outlaw styrofoam packages, styrofoam cups, and food containers from restaurants and businesses that where there are 15 or more of these businesses in the county. That really comes down to very few businesses. It comes down to probably your fast food franchises, the popular ones.
You almost could get it with Dunkin' Donuts and Stewart's.
And Dunkin' Donuts. Well, Stewart's uses paper cups.
Yep.
Yeah. Dunkin' Donuts relies on it. In fact, our reporter, Paul Grondel, went out and spoke to some folks at Stewart's, and they say that some of their customers really like the styrofoam. It's cool to the touch, even though they have a hot drink, and it keeps the drink hot. And paper can kind of be hot on your hand.
Yes.
Even when you have a little protector, it's still hot in your hand. And then the drink cools more quickly. And, you know, you get into, you know, the practical aspects of it. The county executive, Dan McCoy, in passing it says this is part of an entire green initiative. He says he was influenced by his children. They learned about environmental protections and efforts in their schools, and they've influenced him and influenced others. You know, we're learning it from our kids. It's a good thing to get these out of the waste stream. They don't, you know, break down. They're there for... they're made out of hydrocarbons. They're there for thousands of years, they say. They'll be in the landfills.
I always like sandwiches my mother wrapped up in wax paper. Why can't we just go back to wax paper? My question is, will prices go down since you don't have to pay for...
Well, interesting. They say it's going to go up, and layoffs could ensue.
Well, that's a...
Well, that's what McCoy acknowledged, opposition from restaurant owners who said it could hurt business and could prompt layoffs. Really?
Well, I think that's always going to be the threat. If they pass raise minimum wages, there's going to be layoffs. If you put any restriction on me, it's going to hit my costs. It's going to be layoffs. It's very interesting because a few weeks ago, a group has started pushing an effort in New York State to try to ban plastic bags.
From
the supermarkets, or make it a fine. It's the Citizens Campaign for the Environment and the environmental advocates who are pushing the governor in his next budget bill to include, a five cent tax or fine
penalty,
or fee or something if you use a plastic bag.
There are some countries that have managed to ban plastic bags. In Rwanda, and this is in Central Africa, you come into that country on a bus or a train and you're stopped at the border, and inspectors go through all your luggage to make sure you don't have, you know, like your shoes or your dirty clothes in a plastic bag. They're confiscated. And the country is stunningly clean, and yet that's such a kind of...
Yeah. the irony of it.
Strong arm tactic is really kind of scary.
What would you put? Would you use wax paper on your dirty shoes that you're putting into your
travel bag? Those in those like lovely little tote bags that the companies who are losing money because they can't use styrofoam sell instead. You know, buy a recyclable bag for 99 cents.
Well, the folks pushing for the plastic bag ban note that there are a couple of municipalities in New York that have already done this. You know, down in Rye, New York, for example, mm-hmm. they cite. But the problem is doing it just in Albany County and not everywhere else is going to have a limited effect. You really need New York City's looking at it. Some out on Long Island are
looking
at it.
There's a town in Massachusetts and one in New Hampshire that have done this as well.
Right. I mean, the city of Portland, Oregon has done it. Seattle, Washington has done it.
To be clear, we talked here. The examples we used were cups, but this would also include those little containers.
Right, those square boxes that they put leftovers in, things like that.
Now, would that also stop, say, the local grocery store, where there are many in the chain around, from selling styrofoam plates?
That's
styrofoam.
Not addressed, and I don't believe that would be covered. So you could go into your, you know, your grocery store
picnic
or your
supplies,
you know, picnic supplies and get those cups if you were going to have a party. And if you just ran a small business and you only had one restaurant or a couple of restaurants, you wouldn't be affected by it. So it seems like it's going to be a very limited impact. Except
they got a lot of press out of a very limited impact move.
It does. I mean, it's a symbolic effort. I mean, and it sounds like something that you would expect Mike Bloomberg to do. And New York City is looking at it.
So, yeah. All right. Well, very good. Let's take a break. Jessica, let's take a break and we'll be back and we'll talk about Blagojevich next on the Roundtable.
Support for WAMC comes from Ithaca College, a community of scholars and leaders working to help create the future. Ithaca.edu/read for information. The Shops at Crawford Square, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, featuring Brenda and Company, serving lunch daily and specializing in catering for corporate and social events, weddings, and more. BrendaAndCompanyCaterers.com. And HMD at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Roald Dahl's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, weekends through December 22nd. Saratoga Spa State Park, HomemadeTheater.org.
This is WAMC's Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard. Today on Midday Magazine, a look at school safety 1 year after the tragic shootings at Newtown. You'll hear from those working to improve school safety in New York State, and as schools have been implementing stronger safety policies, if they believe they are safer today.
And what we found is about 60% of them indicated that they believe that their schools are safer today than they were a year ago.
This story coming up on Midday Magazine, today at noon here on WAMC.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:51 is the time on your Friday the 13th. Rosemary Armeo is here. Mike Spain from the Times Union is here. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. That's the guy. Roundtable at WAMC.org is our email address if you want to weigh in on anything you've heard discussed today on the program. Here's one. Remember former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich? Remember him? He went up the river. He'll get another chance to win his freedom today, perhaps his last chance, as a 3-judge panel hears oral arguments in his appeal. It's at the 7th Circuit Court of Appeals. And basically, the appeal is everybody does this.
Yeah.
And frankly, I only bring this up because I love saying Blagojevich, and we don't get a chance to do it anymore.
Come visit in Bosnia. We say names like that all the time.
It's
there.
Fun. It's Slobodan Milosevic. Yeah, right.
Yeah, he basically was saying that his activities, for which he's serving prison time now, federal prison time, were political horse trading, run-of-the-mill kinds of things that politicians do all the time.
And in Illinois, he may be right. 4 out of the last 7 governors have ended up in jail.
Are they trying to make a statement by putting these guys in? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the give and take, I mean, that politicians have where you do something I want, I do something you want. It involves sometimes campaign contributions from individuals who you are friends with. You know, where does the line get crossed? Well, it was clearly crossed here, according to the courts in Illinois, the federal courts that prosecuted and convicted Rod Blagojevich.
Blagojevich, as I say. It's sort of like Jerry Lewis.
Yeah. Blagojevich.
Well, Blago, as he's better known, is spending time in prison in Colorado, a federal prison, and he's trying to get his sentence reduced at least. And this is, you know, this is just one more effort. But the kinds of things that he was convicted for, I would say, go on all the time and never get really, you know, there's no scrutiny.
I mean, we could mention Joe Bruno, who was accused of sort of similar things, not selling his office outright, but trading his name.
Influence. You know, his influence.
And it's been difficult to get a conviction against it. One was gotten, then it was nullified because the law was mushy. Mm-hmm. So we as a nation have trouble distinguishing what's okay as far as this political horse trading is and what isn't. But Blagojevich was so beyond the pale. I mean, he's trying to.
Well, they caught him on tape, too.
Yeah, I mean, he was.
That helps.
That helps. And he was trying to sell the seat of the president of the United States, the former seat. That's pretty bold.
Yeah.
I do think the sentence is hideously long.
Yeah,
14
I think
years?
It was
we
his
send,
arrogance that probably hurt his efforts to get a lighter sentence. If he had been contrite in any way, and he's clearly not contrite here.
No.
If he had been contrite in any way, I think, you know, he might have done
better. Let us compare 14 years to the young man in Texas who has too much money and killed four people.
Right. And he'll be on probation.
14
years is a long time. And that's it. Yeah. Well, now, according to the AP article that I read on this, this is not a good shot for Blagojevich. Appellate judges at the Seventh Circuit have a reputation for rarely quashing convictions unless the lower court's errors were huge. Apparently, they reverse court findings about 15% of the time. Blagojevich's appeal includes a laundry list of alleged errors by trial judge James Zagel. It says he allowed one juror, referred to only as juror number 174, to remain on the panel during the second and decisive trial, even after he said about Blagojevich during jury selection, "Yeah, I just figured him possibly to be guilty."
Yeah,
is that enough?
The court's already thrown that out. I mean, yeah, he's trying everything that he can to get out, whether it's because of a reduced sentence.
And more power to him. This, once again, is the mercy of the American justice system. You get a shot at it.
And, you know, maybe the sentence doesn't fit the crime. I don't know. He was selling a United States Senate seat outright for cash, you know, and the guy he ended up picking ended up sitting, you know, so he has, I mean, it could have influenced laws, you know, that govern all of us. So it's not small politics.
Well, the good news for all of us is throughout the news day, we'll be able to say Blagojevich several times. it's very enjoyable. It's a nice, relaxing word to say. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. You can email us at roundtable@wamc.org. Feel free to comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC. A roundtable. A couple of minutes left here, Mike, and I saw a headline in the TU that frankly confounds me. Grant to aid Zen work.
Yes, Zen work. Zen in this particular case stands for Zero Energy Nano. And
not exactly Buddhist.
No, it's not about a Buddhist temple going up in Albany. It's going to be a huge building that is going to be part of the SUNY College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering, and that is the new university that seems to be exploding out of the ground near the intersection of Fuller Road and Washington Avenue in Albany, across from the State University. And the news this week is that the Zen building, which is the next building to be built on this campus, is going to get $4 million from the $83 million in regional economic development funds that were announced by the governor this week. A lot of money is coming.
How many jobs has this whole thing created since it started?
The
whole,
the economic development fund?
The whole nano in
the
this
nano
area.
Thing.
Has it been as big as promoted?
It's tangentially, it's connected to, Semitech, the consortium of chip manufacturers. They brought in hundreds of jobs. Mm-hmm. Private manufacturers have added jobs. It's connected up to Global Foundries, which is thousands of jobs ultimately, So, it's good at the exact measure, I think time will tell. But this particular building is going to house Tech Valley High School, which is a regional high school that is now in Rensselaer or in East Greenbush in space over there. But it's going to be moving over here. And until the building is built, they'll be in another location, I guess. But big news, and you're going to see more construction.
At timesunion.com.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Mike Spain. Thanks to Rosemary Armeo. Thanks to you for listening. Reminder, winter storm watch is in effect from tomorrow morning through to Sunday morning for pretty much the entire WAMC
listening. Go buy milk and toilet paper.
That's
get
right.
out there to those stores.
Hunker down
panic.
And get ready. No. We don't like to panic anybody about the weather. Okay, we're done.
No.
No. You don't think so?
I think you are.
Well, it fills 15 seconds of time. All right, that's it. We're done for the first hour of the show. There's more roundtable ahead.